for many reasons, we just accept like every responsibility that comes our way, right? And something I am becoming, I don't know, very reluctantly aware of is the fact that a lot of times that is a little bit more ego-driven than I wish it was. It's very flattering when someone comes to you and says, hey, teach these university classes, or, hey, you know, you're such a great teacher. Will you please squeeze my son in? You know, it feels good. And the more I listen to teachers talk about being overwhelmed and overloaded, the more I'm like, ooh, I think we are maybe not fully aware of how much of an ego stroke that is.
You're listening to the Integrated Music Teaching Podcast from Top Music. Tune in weekly as we interview music teachers and experts from around the world to explore creative activities and ideas that build learning connections in students. Our integrated music teaching approach will deepen your students' understanding of musical concepts, engage them in critical thinking, improve their reading and performance, foster their curiosity, and prepare them for a lifetime of music making. Welcome back to the Integrated Music Teaching Podcast from topmusic.co. I'm Tim Topham, and hello to all the teachers out there. It's wonderful to be spending a little bit more time with you again this week, and I hope you have had a great week, have some exciting things planned for the weekend, and maybe that's listening to this show. So let's get into the show today. We have a special guest who has been on the show once before, back in episode number 231, and that's the wonderful Christina Whitlock. And back then, we were talking all about impact on students and avoiding burnout and all sorts of different things. And Christina had just started her brand new Beyond Measure podcast, which she's now just surpassed 100 episodes on, which is super cool. And we're going to talk about that a little bit in a moment. But today's focus is all about how Christina really felt like she got her time back and in some ways her whole life back after moving to a group teaching approach just in the last few weeks before recording this episode. So this was really, really fresh in her mind, and the change she'd spent most of summer sort of buying some extra digital pianos and rearranging her studio and working out what she was going to teach. And so you get to hear really fresh and raw kind of up to the minute excitement and information all about how she's going with this change. So this is a really important episode if this is something that you might be considering yourself either now or in the future. Now, Christina is also one of our Lite members of Top Music Pro, and she mentions in this episode our power hours. Now, in fact, she attributes part of her podcast organizational success to our power hours. So our power hours are our weekly co-working online work sessions, which we host three times a week in different time zones, as part of the benefits of being a Top Music Pro member. And you can join us on any of our plans to be able to access these power hours. They're totally free. And what we do is come together for an hour. At the start of the hour, we let everyone know what we're going to be working on, give us a little bit of accountability, and then at the end, we wrap up and let everyone know how we went. And they have been hugely successful. I tend to join the Thursday 11 a.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time ones. And there's two others that are designed to be able to capture anyone who's in the United States or over in Europe and those time zones too. So if this is something that would be interesting to you, maybe you weren't even aware that this is a feature of becoming one of our members, then just head over to topmusicpro.com. Christina's, as I said, one of our Lite members. That's just $10 a month. You get access to these power hours, 60 different back issues of our webinars that I've run. I cannot believe I've run that many webinars. And of course, our amazing Top Music Sheets, free sheet music each and every month. So if you'd like to come and join us, topmusicpro.com. There's a great quote in this recording too that I want you to listen out for. And it's in relation to our discussion around what methods you should teach or could teach a student. And Christina says, "I believe the method is the teacher." And I think that's a really great one to listen out for and to think a little bit more about, because it's really quite true, isn't it? I mean, we have to tailor what we do to our students anyway. And the method is just a small part, really, of our approach. The teacher, the relationship, the rapport, and the way that we operate with each of our students, that really is the method in some ways, isn't it? What do you think? Let me know. I always love hearing what you think about these episodes, any questions you might have or thoughts. You can always head to our show notes for today, which is at episode, so topmusic.co/episode308. or find us anywhere on social media or in any of our Facebook groups. Christina Whitlock's teaching experience ranges from collegiate teaching to leading a state music teacher club and in private practice. She's passionate about creating a positive life impact as a teacher and networking and helping other fellow teachers. She operates a lively independent piano studio in addition to teaching adjunct at Taylor University. Christina is a past state president of the Indiana Music Teachers Association, as well as a frequent speaker, adjudicator, and collaborator. Her passion for celebrating the music teaching profession has recently spilled over into a weekly podcast titled Beyond Measure with Christina Whitlock, and we're going to explore all about that today, as well as the group teaching. Well, welcome back to the show, Christina. It's great to have you on the show again.
Thank you so much, Tim. I'm always happy to have someone to converse with since I'm usually on the airwaves by myself.
That's right. And you do a lot of solo shows on your podcast. We're going to talk about your podcast first up, actually. Look, to be honest, there's lots of ton of things that we could talk about from your recent edition of Group Teaching, which is kind of an epic change you've made. So I want to talk about that. You teach at a university. You've got lots of creative projects on the go, but actually, before we do that, let's just go, for people who don't know you, where are you and what does your studio look like?
All right. So I am in Muncie, Indiana. So that is Northeast Indiana, kind of almost in the middle of the United States. I teach a fairly large private studio here. I've got somewhere in the neighborhood of 40 students right now, and that's after a significant downsize. And I also just dabble in a lot of different creative endeavors because, like many of us, I just have these ideas that won't stop forming in my brain, and I'm just trying to get them out into the world so that I don't go crazy just thinking about them over and over again anymore.
Fantastic. I know that feeling. And one of those creative ideas is the Beyond Measure podcast, and we talked about that in our last episode very briefly, but you had only just started it then. Was that so? That was early 2021. Wasn't it?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah. So lots has happened in the last 2 years. And I couldn't believe when I found out that you were almost at 90, almost at 100 episodes. That's just...
We're really close.
Congratulations. Because, you know, there were quite a few podcasts started during the pandemic and not many of them have sustained quite as you have. So, and I know how much work it takes. So huge kudos to you. So firstly, why did you start it? And then we'll dig into a little bit more about how it's going on. But what's the genesis?
Well, I'll tell you, I, first of all, appreciate the props from, you know, you're the original, right?
The OG.
It's so great. You have tread the way for so many of us, Tim. It's so great. No, I think because I just consume a lot of podcasts, there's only so many you can listen to before you kind of start imagining what you would contribute if you were going to have one, right? At least that's how my brain works. And so I kind of hosted episodes in my brain for like a couple of years, which is quite comical and maybe a little nutty of me. But I was finding myself just like generating all these topics. And then I was like, oh, let's give it a try. And of course, you know, it's kind of, it's harder than you think it's going to be, right? So I spent a lot of time just kind of recording by myself. It was really important to me to have kind of a conversational flow in the podcast. And yet it's hard to find that when you're by yourself, just trying to act like you're talking to a room full of people, even though you're not.
Yes. So, just looking at their microphone and talking, it really is quite different. It's the same when I first did webinars as well, when you can't see anyone, you might see the chat role, but you can't see anyone. It's a really different kind of presenting. And because I know you present at conferences and workshops and things as well.
Yeah. And I tell you, like, you're talking about webinars, like now that we all present online to teacher groups so much, that is really, I think that is the most exhaustive thing is to give virtual presentations because I feed so much off the energy of other people. But with the podcast, that really, I tried to kind of lay the project down several times, but it kept kind of bubbling back up for me.
And you mean lay it down as in put it aside?
Yeah. Yeah. As in I tried to say like, it's too much out of my comfort zone. I'm going to not do this. but I just kept kind of coming back to the surface. And when I like stumbled on this angle of, oh, like let me be a friend to the studio teaching community, since we all know the energy we soak up from one another when we do get to spend time together. I'm kind of all about community in life and in piano teaching. And so it was like, oh, if I could be a friend to people on their own time that they could, you know, grab a cup of coffee with or whatever, that's what I got that idea. And I thought, oh, okay, I kind of really like that. And I would really like that in my life. So the like anytime piano teacher friend was born. That's me. It's what I call myself. And what's so funny, of course, is that it's ended up like making me a ton of friends in return. So I feel like now I have friends all over the world that I probably wouldn't have known. And it feels like we have two-way conversations, even though it's just me like talking into my microphone in my closet.
I think there'll be other teachers listening to this who are sort of resonating with that feeling that you mentioned earlier on, which was, what would I do if I had a podcast or a YouTube channel or whatever it was, and thinking about those questions and or the angle that they would take. And, you know, I would really encourage them to do what you've done and just go, you know what, yeah, there's a little bit of a technical hurdle at the start. It's not that there's lots of online, you know, resources for finding out how to do it. Just try it out. And the reason I say that is because you've found such a great niche for yourself. It's different. It's so you. And that's, I think, another important aspect of anyone starting another podcast or whatever it is. You've got to find, number one, what's true to you and what is the thing that makes the show you, and what is that different, slightly different angle that you can take. And your show is completely different from mine, completely, and all the other ones out there, which is why I'm sure you have a great base of teachers who just love every single episode and tune in every time.
That is really sweet of you. And it is. It's been really flattering and encouraging, the base that I've built, the community that I've found around this. But I'm with you. Like, I always think, you know, even if you're not going to be in it for the long haul, I mean, I'm a firm believer that we all have something to teach the other teachers in our communities. And I would love to see teachers just come up with like a 10 episode series of like, this is what I do really well. You know, like that would be so fantastic just to be able to, you know, to learn from each other and our each other's experiences. And I always think like with my podcast, it's so much, it's not, you know, here, let me show you how to do this, or this is the way to X, Y, or Z. But it's, hey, I've been teaching a long time and this is the experience that I've had. And I bet you've had it too, you know, and that to me is something the world could use a lot more of.
So would you say it's more about sort of affirmation and confirmation, your show and that support, rather than mine, I guess, which is a bit more, here's some cool things to try, if you're summarizing the whole thing. Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. I go to you for like ideas and strategies, and and I think people come to me for like, oh, like, let's hold hands and yeah, yes, and process all that's going on, because you know there's been a lot going on the last few years.
Holy moly, isn't that true?
right.
So you're almost up to, as we said, 100 episodes. What are you up to? 90 something. Is that right?
Yeah. I'm in the mid 90s right now. So 100 will hit in October.
You're going to have to think about 100 if you haven't recorded it yet. Are you doing something special?
Oh, I think I'm going to do kind of a state of the podcast episode where I talk about like the most popular episodes. I listen to some podcasts that do that, and I'm always interested in all the stats. I'm kind of a numbers girl, so I think I might share some of that and maybe just some humorous behind the scenes things that people might not have realized.
Great idea. And how long does it take you? Because I find solo shows, which are what you predominantly, in fact, that's all. Do you do any interviews or all solo?
No, it's all solo thus far.
Okay. So solo shows for me take lots longer than an interview show. How long do you think it would take you, just the preparation, so not editing or any of the post-production, to prepare what you're going to say?
This is really interesting, and your audience is going to think that you encouraged me to say this, but this is not true. So independently, I do write out all of my talking points for each episode and then present them in a conversational manner, right? But the ideas are all sketched out. And so to do that, for a little while, it was taking me somewhere in the neighborhood of like 2.5 to 3 hours. Sometimes I do like 20-minute episodes. And as we all know, if you've ever done anything like this, to keep things shorter is actually harder, right? It's a lot more time consuming to whittle information out. So the refining and the editing process to really decide what I needed to cut out is what usually takes me the most time. But I'll tell you what, I started attending power hours with Tara this week, this like in the last couple of months.
That's so cool. I didn't know.
We meet. And I love like the power hour concept for me is that's a real win. It really helps me. And so we'd meet it's Monday mornings at 10 o'clock for me in the morning. And I have been able the last several weeks, I have cranked out the next episode in that hour. And I think because it's just so like, you know, gung ho, I'm going to report back to these other ladies what what I got done. And it's so great. So again, it sounds like sponsored content, but it's not. It's just true.
I had no idea. Tara, yeah, there you go. She's kept it very quiet. That's very cool. So the power hours, just for people who are listening and are like, what the hell is this? These are our co-working sessions. We do 3 a week in different time zones. And for our Top Music Pro members, even on the Light Plan members can access this, $10 a month. And come and join us on any one of those three or all three if you, because some of them are a night owl, like the Australian one for you would be at some ungodly hour.
That might be kind of fun.
Yeah. But you check in at the start, you say, this is what I'm going to do. And then everyone switches off their microphones and just gets to work for the hour. And I agree. There's just something about committing to what you're going to do and then knowing that you're going to be asked at the end how you went just keeps you on board and on track, and knowing that there are other people working really hard while you're working hard too. So that was lovely to hear. That's great. Thank you for sharing that. So now that you're nearing 100, what could you summarize just a few things that you've learned from doing the show? And this could be either from feedback that you've got, for example, or just the experience yourself of doing the show.
Yeah. Well, I think it's first of all just affirmed everything that I already knew in terms of humans need connection. And we all just thrive off of understanding that there are other people out there who experience the same things we do, right? So knowing that, looking for ways in which that can translate more into my teaching, which connections in my studio is kind of my sweet spot already, you know, the relationships and all of that. We do that well in my studio. But at the same time, it's just such a reminder that people just need to know that they are seen and understood. And so that's a recurring theme in a lot of episodes. It's like, you know, when you're dealing with difficult parents, you know, make sure you express to them, okay, I understand where you are coming from. Like that is the number one thing you can do to diffuse any kind of tension, right? And that's true of, you know, there's countless scenarios we can apply that to. But in the end, we just all want to be seen and understood by each other. So that I think is one of the underlying lessons of the whole thing.
Yeah, that tactic works with kids as well. I know that
absolutely.
Our kids, if you could just say, yes, I have heard you. I understand what you're saying. But no, no, you can't do that. But yes. Is it? No, I agree.
And it just blows right on over.
Yeah, well, sometimes I wish.
Sure. Me too.
And so what's the goal? What's the goal for the show? Can you see yourself doing this another 100 episodes?
Yeah, I think so. I always laugh because I think, I don't know if it was, oh goodness, if it was a Seth Godin something, or I remember when I was like just getting the podcast rolling that I heard someone who's good at this stuff say, you know, don't start a podcast unless you're in it for 100 episodes because it's a long game, you know? And I took that to heart, and now I'm like, oh, I'm almost at 100 episodes and I have plenty to go. So this is good. But like I said earlier, I kind of challenged that too. Like, I think, you know, there's something to be said for getting small bits of information out there as well. But no, so I just plan on keeping it rolling. I have received the affirmation, I guess, that I needed, that I have ideas that resonate with the piano teaching community. And studio music teachers of every instrument, actually. And so it's giving me kind of the motivation and the assurance that I can go on and pursue some other projects that I've always wanted to do as well. So I've got some writing, I've got some course development, I've got some supplements I want to create and all those kinds of things. And if I could just find more hours in the day, they'd be out there.
Yeah, wow. Wait, do you mean supplements? Like food supplements?
Different. Or... No,
not teaching like supplements.
Like teaching supplements. Okay. So some compositional projects and that kind of thing. Anyway, it's kind of a unique idea I have in my brain that I have to hash out a little bit more. But basically,
And all writing, kinds of things. Are you a composer or writing as in text writing?
Both. So I don't have a lot of compositional experience besides the fact that anytime I had to do compositions during my degree work, my professors were always really excited about it. So I have a feeling like if I can just find a season where that's a focus for me, I have some ideas I'd like to bring to light. However, it's probably pretty far down the list right now. So don't look for Christina Whitlock compositions anytime soon, will ya? But writing, yes.
Yeah. So let's talk about the year that you've had. And one of the things that anyone following you online will know is that you recently changed to group teaching and kind of went deep, like you jumped in the deep end. You bought instruments. You didn't just kind of dabble for a little bit. You went, but I think that's kind of, Krista, that's what you're like, right? Jump in,
well,
head first, go for it.
Yeah, we don't do anything halfway in my life. That's for sure.
So tell me about the year that you've had and why the change.
Yeah, well, I feel like I've been all over social media whining about how overloaded I was last year. So I don't, suffice to say, I just took on too much. You can't imagine listening to me.
No, that's right. I could not possibly imagine that was the case.
It's my recurring life lesson. And I'll be very honest up front. As this fall gets rolling, I still am overloaded more than I should be. However, I'm shifting some things around. So basically I have a really, really, loyal roster of students and I desperately needed to cut my evening hours of teaching. And so the only way I could really deal with trying to keep as many of them as possible and yet also accomplish the boundaries I needed to set for my family was move to group teaching. Right. And I am fortunate, you know, again, I have all these piano teacher friends all over the world now. And I have several of my long-term real life friends who have been here, done this. And so, yeah, I jumped in. I bought 4 Kawai Digitals after much, much, much decision-making at the store. The sales people were very kind and generous with me in my indecision. And I appreciate that. But yeah, they got delivered in August and I am running these multi-level group classes. And I feel incredibly fortunate because it's been an emotional roller coaster far more than I expected it to be. But these are all students that I already have a relationship with. And they already love me and I already love them and I don't have to sell them on how fun piano is or anything like that. And that, I think in hindsight, is really fantastic and was a smooth way to transition. As I look to the future, I do hope to eventually find myself more in equal level groups where, you know, I can start like just beginner groups from scratch and kind of sequence them through the years together. But for now, we have, you know, I teach 1 group each evening. I'm still teaching an hour of private lessons each evening as well. But I also do 1 group of 4 each evening. And, you know, the first week I thought, okay, I think I can do this. And the second week I thought, okay, we're having fun, but I'm not sure we're getting enough done. And then after that, after week 3, I have now found a piece about, oh, okay, I think this is really working.
That's amazing.
So
congratulations,
I'm really excited,
Christina,
about it. Yeah.
That's, you. Yeah. And that really, I mean, that truly is diving in the deep end for someone that's never done that before. And I know there are lots of teachers out there who would be sort of giving you a round of applause because they've perhaps thought of it and gone, I'm a bit too worried about it. Oh, sorry, just on the amount of hours that you've been able to get back. So you were teaching 3 to 4 hours a night and you're now down to two-ish?
Okay, so I'm teaching about 8 less hours for the week altogether. I do have a pretty healthy number of homeschool and adult students who come during the day as well. So in case no one thinks the numbers are adding up. But I cut about 8 hours out of my evenings total for the week. And I am actually still making more money than I made last year, because that's the beauty of group.
That's right. And now you can spend more time with your family.
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly.
And I'll tell you, I mean, all of these things that I've always believed to be true about group work. And again, the importance of just being together and the benefits thereof, you know, like I'm seeing it so much. And so a lot of my groups, some of the students already knew each other, but they're already like bonded and they're working together so well, and they're really supportive of what we do. We always start the class with an activity together, and then we end with one or two of them giving a performance on my acoustic grand. And they're so supportive of each other. It's great. And so I just see so many benefits. In addition to the fact that we're always playing ensembles now, not always, but we often play an ensemble each week. And their rhythmic, you know, awareness is so much improved already. So I get really excited. My piano teacher heart is rejoicing.
That's great. You mentioned a little side comment about how you realized that they weren't making as fast progress or something to that effect. Like you had to reassess your expectation, would you say, for how what you would get done?
I think you definitely do. And I will say, like, I was very thoughtful about who was going to group and who was staying in a private lesson. And most of my students who I put in group, and I will say, again, parents were right on board. I think I only had 2 or 3 kind of hesitate about this transition. And that's to be expected. I don't blame them one bit. But yeah, by like week 2, like I said, like I knew the kids were having fun. There's lots of laughter. There's, you know, lots of playing around. And at the same time, I thought, oh, you know, are we going to, you know, make as much progress as we did before? And there is an expectation, I think, that needs tempered in that situation. Like maybe it's not the quantity that I'm used to. Like maybe we're not passing through as many pieces as we did before. And of course, I'm still finding my way. I'm only like a month and a half in at this point. So it's still very much a work in progress. But I do think that in the end, all those other benefits that I was talking about certainly are worth something, right? And yeah, so there are certainly different expectations. Again, the kids that I put in these groups, they are students who are pretty busy in their schedules, and they're not my high level competition kids. You know, they, you know, want to play for fun, and they're kids that if it wasn't, you know, for the relationship I have with them, they might not be taking piano at all. You know, they might give it up for all their other things that they want to do. And my perspective is always that, you know, 30 minutes or an hour at the piano a week with me is so much better than 0 minutes a week at the piano at all. So I will take it exponentially. So
what resources or methods did you look for or try out when you started? Because that, I imagine that if you know moving to groups and you know that there's a curriculum or something you can use that could ease the transition, or did you just go, I'm just doing this my own way?
Oh, well, Tim. So methods and Christina Whitlock are a funny subject. So I do actually, you can identify with this. I believe very much that the method is the teacher, right? And so I don't use one method exclusively. And almost any method book I use it in more of a supplemental way where it's not our primary focus. It's not what's driving the education of the student. That's me. And so, you know, there, I don't adhere to any single philosophy all the way, you know? And so with that, I would love, part of me thinks, boy, you could really simplify your life if you would just use the same book with everyone and we'll all turn the page together. And
I've thought that too. How easy would life be?
How easy would that be? But I love the piano repertoire, Tim. Like I love the wealth of styles, the wealth of, you know, characters we can play, all of this, you know, I mean, that's our big selling point for the piano, right? We can do anything. And so I, in moving to these multi-level group classes, it really is sort of a more of a simultaneous independent lesson. So again, we do some kind of rhythmic or aural warm up together, and then they go to headphones, and then they're doing their scales to warm up, and then they start working on a piece that they want to show me first, and I cycle around. And you know, that's where I've had to make my biggest change, because I'm a detail teacher and I like to get really, really nitty gritty with every phrase. And I cannot do that anymore. And I guess that's where my big, you know, aha moment came in week two, where I was like, oh no, you know, am I going to be the same teacher? But it turns out I can let a little bit of that go in the setting, and we're still having a good time.
Right. And then you finish the class with an ensemble piece of
something. Exactly. Yeah. Ensemble or solo performances. And I think that's what sold me. I remember I was talking about this with Joy Morin, who, you know, pillarinmypiano.com. And she does some groups along these lines. And the performance time at the end of class really sold me on this, because I thought, oh, good. Like, I'm all about like safe spaces we can just get used to playing in front of one another in. And again, they've already proven to be the most supportive little groups. And so I love that students get a chance to regularly just, you know, put something out there. And sometimes it's only half of their piece that they're working on. And sometimes it's not. But anyway.
That's great. Well, thank you so much for sharing that. One other question I think that teachers would probably have would be, if you're going to suddenly teach four kids instead of one, you're going to need to invest. You bought some kawais. That was obviously a thousand each or something, I would guess. So advice for teachers on how to manage that? Can they kind of borrow it or lease them, or would they need to save up for them?
Yeah, I think that was definitely our number one deterrent. And my husband and I are both pretty careful with our finances. And I would say we're not very, we're not very excited to like spend money to make money, you know, which you have to do sometimes.
Yeah, cautious.
Yeah, we're very cautious and security minded and all of those things. And so I've kind of been kicking it around for years. And it wasn't until I just really reached dire straits with my scheduling that I thought, all right, something has to give. And it's funny how at that point, like being mentally ready to make the jump, you know, so yeah, I did. They were approximately 1,000 each. So that's $4,000, right? Which is significant. But in the grand scheme of things, I mean, I'm going to pay them off this year easily, you know, by making some pretty minimal payments, actually. And so, you know, any dealer you work with is going to offer you payment plans, or, you know, I won't tell everybody how to handle their finances. But if you run the numbers, you know, if you are charging in a way that's going to sustain them, I mean, it's really, you know, I mean, it's not actually the big financial feat that I thought it was going to be. Now, there are all kinds of other things that I'd like to get into with it. and buy, you know, like I'd love a controller, you know, so I can really set up the whole lab and all of that. And I realized quickly, I was like, all right, like baby steps, right? Which apparently four kawais is a baby step. But, you know, thinking long term here, if we can, you know, I'll get these pianos paid off this year, and then we'll see where it goes from there.
And that's the important thing. Is to just do a little budget. How much money are you going to bring in, hopefully, from this? How much are the payments? If you don't have the $4,000 up front, then yes, get a payment plan or a small loan from the dealer. How much you need to pay off every month? Is that going to be possible? Can you still make a profit? How much are you charging? You know, these are all questions that are so important for teachers, particularly if they're going to make a shift like you've just done.
Yeah, I mean, the numbers don't lie. If you calculate them correctly.
Yeah. If you calculate them.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I really, it's so funny. And, you know, the same thing happened to me many years ago when I was moving to a flat rate tuition for my studio. Like, I had fought it for several years and I thought, oh, and any way I tried to calculate it, I convinced myself I was going to be losing money. I just still don't know how I did that because I absolutely didn't, of course. You know, flat rate tuition for me was the best decision I ever made. And so it's the same, like when I really hammered out the numbers. And I mean, I did a lot of group piano teaching in college when I was doing my master's degree and that kind of thing. And I always loved it. So it's not entirely new to me, although this form of it is. And I just thought, you know, as teachers, we like to shake it up and do new things sometimes, right? It's kind of a chance to experiment. And honestly, I'll tell you, the dealer that I worked with has a great trade-up program. And if I decide that I hate this and want to trade them in and get a second acoustic, then I told myself, all right, then there we go.
That's what a cool backup. There you go.
A nice little backup plan. Although I see it, I don't see myself doing it at this point, but that's, yeah.
Good to know that the option's there, I guess.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so any sort of tips for teachers who might be considering this? Anything you've learned along the way?
I would just say to prepare yourself for a lot of ups and downs in terms of your, how you feel about it. I was really surprised by how emotional the journey was for me because I thought it out very thoroughly. It was not at all a surprise. But the day those digitals were delivered, you know, first of all, it was just a matter of fitting them in my space the way I wanted. And of course, this is my house. So I'm like, why did I just load my house up with pianos? It's like my front room is very clearly a piano studio now, right? Like it always was. But and there was something that took me a little adjusting to get used to on that front. But even just, you know, we take what we do so seriously. I know, you know, you can tell I do. And so the quality of what I do really matters to me. And so when I started to have those little inklings of doubt of, oh, am I, you know, I don't want anyone to think I'm like swindling them out of money and giving them subpar instruction now, right? Which, you know, really messed with me.
An important consideration for a lot of teachers.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course. Because we all know, you know, in piano teacher world, there's always someone doing it poorly. And we don't want that to be us. But those of us who are worried about it are not
probably
the ones
not
that
the
should
ones.
Be worried about
yes.
it.
Yeah.
Anyway, but so, and I think this is what I keep saying to teachers is that just because you are having doubts or questioning things, it doesn't mean you're on the wrong path, right? Like you can still have made the right choice. You know, it doesn't mean that you're always going to feel 100% centered about it. And in the end, like I said, I'll try it for a year. And if I decide it's not for me, then there's always exit plans too. You know, it doesn't have to be forever.
Now, you also teach at a university. Is yes. that right? Yes. So how do you fit that in? How many?
I'm just kidding. So I oversee the piano pedagogy program at Taylor University, which is a small college here in Indiana. And so I teach a 3-semester course rotation of 2 pedagogy courses and piano literature. And then I oversee a community music program we have for that and teach a handful of applied lessons while I'm there. And so that's 2 days a week. You see where I get myself in trouble, but I'll tell you, like, I have such a heart for like every age of piano student, and that like that college age, I just love working with students at that time of life because they're so sure about everything, you know, like they think they've got it all figured out.
That's right.
And it just cracks me up because I just like, oh, just wait until life wallops you. But it's so refreshing to see people just so convicted and excited about any topic, you know. And so I would miss it if I wasn't doing it. But we are very much actively overhauling my work commitments right now, trying to decide how to deal with everything.
Yeah, it's hard when you have a real passion for something and you really want to share that passion. It's hard to say no and to get that balance, for sure.
It's something, you know, I mean, so many of us struggle with this same thing. I know. I mean, musicians specifically, we just, you know, for many reasons, we just accept like every responsibility that comes our way, right? And something I am becoming, I don't know, very reluctantly aware of is the fact that a lot of times that is a little bit more ego-driven than I wish it was. It's very flattering when someone comes to you and says, hey, teach these university classes, or, hey, you know, you're such a great teacher. Will you please squeeze my son in? You know, it feels good. And the more I listen to teachers talk about being overwhelmed and overloaded, the more I'm like, ooh, I think we are maybe not fully aware of how much of an ego stroke that is and how that is feeding the overwhelm of what we've got. So that's what I'm currently trying to work out in my own brain.
It's also an element of doing stuff for free and for because you're passionate and, oh, you'll just do this. And, oh, you can you just look after this choir for a few weeks and because you're an all-rounder musician. And I think there is that element of not only yes, not being able to say no, but not asking for compensation for those things.
Oh, golly. Yeah. Which fortunately, I have figured that part out for the most part. I do a lot less free work than I used to. So that part, I guess, is good. But there, but what is that? You know, there is this compulsion we, you know, that kind of frequents around musical circles. Like, oh, you love playing music. Here's a chance to play music.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. Like, audition. You can play for auditions for the next 8 hours. Just sight read. Go. Yeah.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's something that I've let go. I did used to do staff accompanist work at the university that I teach at. So there's something I have let go over the years. There you go. That's brutal work, as you know.
Yes, I know it all too well. I'm keen to sort of wrap things up. It's been such a fun time chatting with you, and I'm so excited for all the changes you've made and all the things that you're doing, your podcast, you know, private teaching, podcasting, group teaching, university teaching. Like,
it's ridiculous.
I'm kind of tired just hearing about all those things, but but one thing you are really passionate about is helping teachers with their own creative projects and encouraging them to take steps in those directions and not just leave them, you know, in the back of their mind or sitting on a shelf, those ideas. So is there a way we can kind of summarize your thoughts on advice for teachers who want to dabble in other creative projects?
Definitely. I guess it's the fact that as quote unquote creatives, right, and of which we should all be identifying with, you know, ideas do tend to come pretty easily to us, right? And I think what I am trying to figure out is, you know, the best way to say, like, all right, you know, how do I pick what to focus on now? Right? This is obviously the thing of my life. Yeah. So in order to do that, it's that whole adage of like, you know, if it's not a hell yes, it's a no, right? And so I like to remind teachers of that. I do a lot of consultations with teachers for a myriad of reasons, whether that's policy revisions or, you know, programming for their repertoire, or sometimes it's just, you know, how do I deal with all this creative energy? So I think part of it is narrowing it down, and part of it is also just understanding the time frame of creative work. Like, this was a big aha moment for me last year that, you know, we can't expect to crank out creative work, you know, between the hours of 10 and 11. You know, like, you need bigger chunks of time, you know, and that is something I tried really hard this year to incorporate with mild success, to give myself two big chunks of time during the week where I could just write or, you know, fill in the blank, whatever I was going to do. And I just think that this idea of, you know, am I good enough or do I have ideas to contribute to the world? Like, the answer is yes. That, to me, the answer is always yes. And you kind of alluded to it at the beginning. But, you know, if you choose, like, if you want to put ideas out there, sometimes people get way too concerned about what they think the market needs or what they think is going to be the most popular. And really, if you're just true to yourself and you say, all right, this is what I do best and this is what I have to bring to the world, like, I think there's a place for it. That's exactly the boat I was in, where I was like, can I like market myself as just being everybody's friend? And look, I did.
And you've done a great job. Because
truly, if I could sit around and just be friends with people for a living all day, I'd be really great at it. So figure out how to monetize that.
Fantastic. Well, thank you very much for coming on the show again. It's been great to hang out. And I know we've got quite a few mutual friends, actually. I think you were catching up with, because I keep in touch with you, follow what's going on Facebook and things, and you were hanging out. I'm like, oh, you're hanging out with, I can't remember if it was Amy or Jenna, yeah, or somebody. Yeah.
Your intermediate rep specialist, Jenna, is yes. one of my very favorite people. We met on Instagram years ago.
Really? Now.
Yeah. We met on Instagram during when I launched the podcast, and she and I just kind of share a brain about so many things. So
that's
we
super cool.
like
She's
to
amazing.
Sit around and like amen each other as we talk.
I love it. Well, look, you better give your podcast a bit of a promo. Where do people find out more about that? And anything else you want to mention that you've got information online about?
Sure. You can find my podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts. It's the Beyond Measure podcast with Christina Whitlock. And you can find more about me and my myriad of projects and resources for teachers at ChristinaWhitlock.com. So
fantastic. Thanks so much, Christina. It's great to see you again. We'll keep in touch. I'm really interested to hear how, maybe we'll have to do another check-in when we hear how the group piano change has gone into next year.
Let's do it. Thanks right. so much, Jim.
Thanks for coming on the show. See ya.
Thanks.
And that's the show for this week. Next week on the podcast, you won't believe it, but after 309 episodes, we have our first ever podcast guest joining us again. Yes, for those of you who were around back in February 2015 and you enjoyed the episode with Daniel McFarlane, then you're going to love catching up with Daniel again 6 years later, or whatever it is, 308 episodes later. We're talking about how he's been building a brand new primer method, as might say in America, over the last few weeks last few months, and how that's all going and how you could even do that yourself if you're interested. So that's next week on the podcast. Can't wait to speak to you then. I'm Tim Topham, and you've been listening to the Integrated Music Teaching Podcast. I'll speak to you next time. How do you keep up to date with all the latest trends and research into music education? How do you connect with other teachers around the world and make sure your teaching stays fresh and relevant for students of all ages and stages, both now and into the future? I created our Top Music Pro membership to be the one-stop shop for music teaching resources, training, support, and community, and I'd love for you to come and join us inside. With over 40 comprehensive training courses, hundreds of teaching demonstrations and lesson plans, free monthly sheet music, discounts, and all the business and pedagogy support you could ever need, Top Music Pro is the community you've been looking for. If you're ready to level up your learning from the podcast and join thousands of other teachers in our global network, head over to topmusicpro.com today. If you enjoy this show and want to hear more of our work, be sure to subscribe to this podcast wherever you're listening today. For links and resources mentioned in this episode, visit us at topmusic.co/podcast or check out the show notes. I'm Tim Topham, and this is the Integrated Music Teaching Podcast, a production of Top Music. Thank you so much for listening. Enjoy your week ahead, and I'll catch you next time.